Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast where we've built an empire by removing the regrets of others. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 80 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing season 4, episode 22 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled World's End, which aired May 16th, 2017.
And this finale episode was written by Jeffrey Bell and directed by Billy Gearhart. And it was a great way to end the season, but I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed and overjoyed at the same time to find out that just after we got off the microphone last week, they renewed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for season 5.
Yes, they did.
I mean, that was obviously good news, but I was irritated that we had gone on talking about the upfronts and such. And then, like you said, they did it early as usual.
Which begs the question, what's the point of releasing the dates of the upfronts? They make it such a big deal and then they don't stick to it.
Right. I mean, obviously, they also talk about new shows at the upfronts, but yeah, I guess they wanted to announce the good news there. And it is a mixed bag here, because obviously we're happy to get not only a new season, but not a shortened season. We were wondering if it might be shortened, but it is 22 episodes. However, it does not return until after Inhumans finishes. Inhumans is a fall premiere, Fridays at 9 p.m., and 8 episodes later, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will begin. So we might not be talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. until December, January, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible the end of November, although they probably don't want to get involved in the Thanksgiving weekend. So winter 2017, 2018. I mean, if it's 2018, obviously there can't be too many breaks, and that brings up the question of whether they're going to revisit the pod approach that they did with season 4,
which worked so well. So yeah, I would be sad to see the pod structure go. And there is an article out there that I'll put in the show notes that does talk about the pod structure and its success and the producers' desire to return to it if they could, but we'll see how it plays out. Obviously there's a lot of people disappointed by the Friday night death slot, as it were. I think it will thrive and do well. And I think we'll just be looking at another season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., just like they were worried about the 10 o'clock time slot. And that worked out fine. So I think we're just going to have a nice season 5 like any other season.
Yeah, I think the Friday night death slot is something we have to just let go of, that it really doesn't exist anymore.
Right. So that was just great news. And I'm looking forward to seeing what season 5 brings. But we have quite the transition into season 5 with this wrap up of sorts, but also an introduction of some crazy new elements. So let's go ahead and get into our episode discussion.
All right. Well, it was a nice return to the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. insert. You know, look, as much as I loved Agents of Hydra, it was nice to be back with something familiar, but I loved also how they colored it with some Ghost Rider appropriate colorization. So that was cool.
Yeah, because his return was one of the best parts of the episode and ended up being quite integral.
Yes, and I've got a few things to say on that as we go forward. Now, initially, I was concerned that we might be headed for another Senate investigation of S.H.I.E.L.D., but geez, we get to the end and like, well, what the heck is going on? Where is Coulson? And I don't know that the Senate investigation is something that the writers are going to revisit, because on the one hand, they've done it a few times. You don't want to go to the well too often.
Yeah. The mistrust of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that. I mean, obviously Ophelia/Ada was trying to get back to the framework version of the world, but to introduce a attitude of distrust by the government and the people, that kind of already has been done. I agree.
Yeah. Now, not to get too far off track, but the return of Robbie Reyes, a.k.a. Ghost Rider, reminds me of my experience going to Graceland. I was not into it at all. I really had no interest in going. As we pull up to Graceland itself, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And when I hear him revving his car and then appearing for the first time in this episode, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider is cool.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I wasn't sure if I really wanted Ghost Rider to come back because I did love the first pod, but the second and third pods just got so much better that I was almost reluctant to return to that piece of it. But how greatly woven was it into the overall storyline? I mean, it just fit perfectly.
Right. And there were a lot of nuances related to Robbie that we'll talk about as well. Now, I guess on the one hand, let's throw it out there now. Robbie's return, as I understood it, was precipitated by the darkness in him, a.k.a. Ghost Rider, being attracted to dark matter, which is apparently what Ada and the Darkhold are made of. Did I get that right?
I'm not sure if the Darkhold is made of it. I guess it must be.
Or it's attracted to it.
It's attracted to Ada, who has created her body out of dark matter.
Okay. And Ghost Rider wants to put her and it back where they came from.
Right, because it seems like everything that's created with the Darkhold, all the way back to the first pod with Eli, comes from this dark matter, otherworldly energy that is created into matter in our world. And apparently that's just not the natural state of things, and the dark matter wants to return it to where it came from.
Okay. But one of the questions that I think we have to consider is the framework caving in on itself. So does Radcliffe's erasure imply that the framework itself is dead? I mean, are we going to revisit this at all?
I don't think so. I think it was just one of the last things that held on before the bottle and tumbler and beach disappeared right behind him.
All right. So is this his redemption?
I don't think so. I don't think it qualifies fully as redemption, but he certainly learned his lesson and is paying the ultimate price for it.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he seemed to be at peace with that. And,
yeah,
you know, really, there have been a lot of characters who straddle that moral gray area. But for me, he was so compelling that I was just so sorry to see him go. And on the other hand, as you said, it was a great way for him to go. And that in and of itself was pretty satisfying.
Yes, it was fitting.
Now, not quite as satisfying for me is what happened with General Glenn Talbot.
Yeah, that was a little off for me as well.
Now, on the rewatch, I did notice that the bullet struck him off center. So you medical people out there might say, well, yeah, it didn't hit him dead center, so of course he can survive.
Well, I'm just hoping it becomes relevant. If they don't make it relevant for him to have been hit in the head, then I would just say, why not have him hit near the heart or near vital organs? Why did they have to hit him in the head? It just makes it less believable.
Well, he has no heart, so they can't hit him in the heart. All right. Now, so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. Look, I think we all love General Talbot.
Yes.
But sometimes, come on, really? All right. Now, one of the scenes visually that still just freaks me out is the scene in which Ada returns to wreak vengeance on Fitz and Simmons, and that bathed in that eerie blue light. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now just talking about it. And I just love that they carried it through for, you know, I don't know. I didn't time it. It was maybe 2 minutes.
Oh, it definitely was heightened by the cinematography, the great acting of Mallory Jansen, who just killed it as a villain, and the sheer menace that she exuded, especially in her scenes with Simmons.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the lighting helped.
All right. Now, one scene that I'm still a little confused. I love the plan to bring Ada down, but shouldn't she have realized that the Simmons she was stabbing was an LMD?
Yeah, you would think it would take one to know one, I guess, but maybe not in her new human form. Maybe she can't detect it quite as easily. And of course, they are partly flesh and blood.
Oh, the LMDs.
Yeah.
Well, they are, but, you know, we've seen enough of them spark when they get chopped up and things like that. So I'll let it go because it was such a good scene in and of itself. Now, we've talked many times about shipping and how shows sometimes get caught up to the detriment of the story arcs that we really want to care about. But here, I mean, on the one hand, was it a little overly sentimental? I think you could say maybe. But
with who in particular?
Well, I think with several of them, because, you know, if they insert love into the equation, I mean, you've got obviously Mac and Elena. And I think at the end, we have to say, certainly for them, love wins out, that they do have a future together.
Yeah, in fact, it might have even been strengthened by Mac's experience in the framework and the time he had to learn what it was to be part of a family. Yeah. So I think they might actually even come out better than they did before.
Yeah. And I think for a group that's experienced so much loss over the past year, that, you know, it was kind of touching to really see this. But on the other hand, we've got Fitz and Simmons, who, while they do appear to still be together, we know, I mean, if the writers are going to tackle that storyline realistically, we know that there are rough waters ahead for those two. And while they certainly may weather the storm, Fitz is going to take a lot of soul searching to be able to accept what it is he did, albeit it was in a computer simulation.
But they've been there before, and we've seen them get through things almost as bad, whether it be Simmons' return from the planet or Fitz's rehabilitation from his speech problems or anything else. They always seem to weather the storm. And I guess it's just the nature of their relationship. They're always going to have a troubled coming together, I think.
Well, do you think they're going to make Fitzsimmons shippers squirm a little bit? Maybe have them separated for a while?
I think so.
Okay. Now, the one I think it's got to be my favorite is Coulson and May. And, you know, how many lines they had about the bottle of Haig, and they would just do it 15 seconds here, and then maybe 10 minutes later, 10 seconds there. But at the end, it's a relationship reboot, which, given the context of this storyline, was just perfect.
Yeah, that's true. And I do think it was very subtly done and expertly done because of those 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. It wasn't in your face, and it felt natural.
Now, I've made no secret that Daisy Sky, my favorite character in the show, not that I don't love the others, which I do, but I just, on the one hand, my heart, maybe heartbreaking is a little excessive, but she seems to be the odd woman out here. And again, maybe it's the shipper in me, but there seemed to be a little flirting. Flirting's maybe not even the right word, but just a little chemistry between her and Robbie.
Yeah, which we saw inklings of during the first pod. But here it was almost a feeling each other out as to whether or not there was interest from the other, even though they knew it couldn't go anywhere based on Robbie's fate and where he knew he needed to go.
Right. And they both give each other that really subtle head nod. Like,
yeah,
we know what our fate is. It's not to be together. We accept it and we move on. So, and speaking of moving on, I was just so moved by Daisy's speech to Fitz, and I couldn't help but think that this is the mark of a leader. And we've often talked that if Coulson perhaps gets promoted and is no longer the leader of the team, who would step up? And while Daisy has said all along she doesn't want to be in charge, I mean, she's exhibiting all the qualities you want in a leader.
Right. And that was very deliberate, I'm sure, on the part of the writers to not give that line to Coulson. And coming from Daisy, it was much more powerful and gave her a nice character moment at the same time. And for Fitz, too.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, the last scene, I think it's easy to say, season 5 is going to be in outer space. I wonder.
It could be. There's no predicting this, although I'm sure our listener feedback segment will have plenty of predictions.
I mean, it certainly seems to be outer space, but at this point, who knows? All right. Well,
in what context? That's the problem.
All right. So the opening scene, as I mentioned before, Ghost Rider revs up his car, jumps back in the fray, and then we cut immediately to Coulson and May, who are in the midst of a mission to find Ophelia. But of course, the bottle of Haig just won't go away. And I love his line. we might need a second bottle to explain what happened to the first.
I'm just happy that May is not giving up on this, because she could have just brushed it off and thought, yeah, whatever, we've got stuff to do here. But she knows something is going on and she won't let it go.
And that really surprises me in a good way.
It does a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. But she knows the history as we saw it in this season between the two of them. So it wouldn't be out of nowhere from her point of view.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Now, Simmons questions Fitz about, and again, we've gone back and forth. Do we call her Ada or Ophelia? I guess I feel like she's Ophelia.
Yeah.
Because of the human transformation, that Ada was pure robot, if you will.
But I found it interesting that Simmons didn't want Fitz calling her Ophelia.
Well,
she wanted him to call her Ada because of the artificial part of things.
Yeah, well, I didn't find that surprising. I found
And in that particular case, she was, I think, goading her because that was LMD Simmons. But anyway.
You're right. Now, when she questions him, it seems to drive him deeper into this hole that he's digging for himself. She, and rightly so, is only concerned with how to kill Ophelia, but he can't let go of the Dr. Mengele things that he did in the simulation. And you understand that. And that's going to be something that they're going to have to tackle for, I would certainly think, 4 or 5 episodes in season 5.
Well, I think it was important here just to have that awkwardness between Fitz and Simmons as Simmons asks him about how Ophelia got all these powers. And he has to say that, you know, they pulled them from people that they know, like Lincoln and Gordon, and basically people that we have context for knowing here. And he is remembering having tortured them to get those powers from them.
Right. But then she asks him if he wants to kill her, because I think she senses that he's a little hesitant. And when he doesn't answer, that's pretty telling.
Yes, it was.
Right. And anybody that's been in a relationship knows that that's going to come back to haunt him.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we really have two relatively equal stories. I mean, Ghost Rider versus Ophelia is the one we'll tackle first. And I love how Ivanov tells her, you built an empire by eliminating the regrets of others, implying that now, why would you have regrets? And on the one hand, I guess that's a human quality to have. So she should be happy she has regrets.
That's right. It comes with the territory. You got to take the good with the bad.
And, you know, we've talked about how many darned Ivanovs are there.
Yeah, I think they could just keep coming. Each time one goes down, he just puts in an order for another.
Right. Now, we do learn that she's got at least one other LMD design that's working with the Russian team. And as we're, you know, watching them kind of dance around what it is she wants to do, that whole burn this world to the ground or rule over it. And she's so hurt, the woman scorned, and she's willing to burn it down rather than rule it.
Right. I think that she would be perfectly happy to make the world the same as it was in the framework, but overriding all of that is making Fitz suffer.
Right. And you know, the idea of the Darkhold being at the center of all this is certainly something we've known for a while, but her willingness to, I don't know, to let Ivanov take it to that meeting, that was really surprising to me.
Yeah, I wonder why he needed the visual aid. I mean, especially since they made this extra LMD guy, and you're like, who's this dude that's working alongside him? We eventually find out that it's an analyst, a intelligence analyst that would have been invited to such a meeting, but he doesn't really do anything except get Ivanov in there where he can talk about the possibilities. But do they really need to have the book there to refer to it? It seems kind of dangerous.
Right, exactly. And of course, it turns out to be. Now, I already mentioned about forgetting what I said about Ghost Rider, because as soon as he drives up on Ophelia and the Russians, I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then he gets out. I came for that. Can I have it? I mean, I don't think that's the exact words he said, but essentially that was it.
Yeah, I'm taking that with me. And you think that he's going to have trouble with Ophelia, at least. Obviously, he can take care of himself with regard to the others. but it's just so much fun. And several times we get to see some pretty darn cool robot killings, very gory in terms of robot deaths.
Right. And we saw a lot of action scenes, a lot of fight scenes, but they were done so well and so tightly constructed. And then, as you said, we got the fights with the chain, and that's really something I didn't realize how much I missed.
Right, because it had just been introduced in the last time we saw him, and it was really kind of a Johnny Blaze thing, but they just hinted at it, and now it seems to be his main weapon of choice and the method he uses to go between worlds, as it were. So I really liked the fact that not only was he able to cut robots in half, but even just swiping Ophelia with it, it doesn't heal.
Right.
And there's something to that based on the origins of the Ghost Rider and the origins of Ophelia from Dark Matter. She can't heal that away. And suddenly we see another human emotion from Ophelia, fear.
Right. And because she's in physical pain as well. I mean, like you said, it's one thing that it doesn't heal, but that physical pain, I would think, just motivates her even more to make S.H.I.E.L.D. and Fitz pay for the heartbreak that she's feeling at this point. But we learn from Ivanov, and I liked what they did with him, that he seemed to provide some of this background information, this exposition, if you will, that we really needed it. I mean, it was nice to have things clarified. You know, he mentions that that flame had a demon and it was born in the same place that created you. And, you know, that connection then between how she was created, what she is, and then the Darkhold and Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider.
Well, especially since Ivanov has clearly been doing a lot of reading of the Darkhold.
Right. Now, in terms of information being given, Robbie lets us know that the Earth is just one territory in a war that's been going on forever. And I'm assuming he just is speaking generally about a war.
Well, I think, and we're probably going to hear from some listeners about this, and I certainly have seen it on Facebook, it seems to be a subtle nod to Doctor Strange and the way that that story of his being pulled into a multi-world war is tying into this as well, especially given how Robbie opens his portal to another world at the end. Is very similar, at least in appearance and shape, to the portal that Doctor Strange uses.
All right, well, Ivanov and Mishkin go to this meeting, and like you said, they take the Darkhold with them. I suppose that their mission was to bring S.H.I.E.L.D. down, to point out why S.H.I.E.L.D. should essentially be taken out of the equation by the U.S. military. But, of course, Talbot, to his credit, realizes that what it is they're trying to do, and it's kind of hard to believe that he jumps to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s defense, which I think was part of the beauty of the scene.
Yeah, it totally was, especially since we can see how overt they're being about trying to create the same world as that appeared in the framework, which we would think would be impossible to create without pretty massive circumstances to allow such fascist rule of everything. But obviously Ivanov is motivated. We can't forget that he was pretty much the funding source of the Watchdogs. So he really does want Inhumans wiped from the face of the planet. That is one of his prime motivations.
Right. But perhaps the best line of the episode, despite all of this, despite Ivanov's compelling arguments, "I smell a load of L. Ron horse crap," Talbot tells him.
Yep.
And then, of course, we hear the gunfire in the background. Daisy comes in. Of course, it's LMD Daisy, and puts a bullet into Talbot's forehead.
It seems a little bit strange, too, because it didn't seem like it was really part of what Ivanov was trying to do, because he seemed to be trying to do a persuasive number on them. But at the same time, it was important for this to happen with LMD Daisy to be sort of a public relations nightmare for S.H.I.E.L.D. So it was kind of like a two-pronged attack on their part. But the resulting defense, I guess, that's put up by S.H.I.E.L.D. ends up making Ivanov and Mishkin run without taking the Darkhold with them. So it really kind of turned into a well-orchestrated plan into a mess.
Well, right. And my first thought is whether or not that was deliberate. I mean, did they leave it there for some nefarious purpose? But no, I think, as you were implying, that no, it's just poor planning on their part.
They did want the other people at the conference to read the book. So maybe they thought it would bring them on board. Who knows?
But we've already seen the effect that reading the book has on people. So
they want it for themselves. Yeah. Like Eli was trying to take it from his fellow scientists. It almost seems to create a Gollum-like obsession with the precious.
Right. So I'm not sure what they really thought. And it seemed, we seem to be saying that a lot in this episode. I'm not sure what they thought the outcome would be if they let the other people there read it.
Right.
But be that as it may, Daisy and Robbie confront Ada and LMD Daisy, who's quickly dispatched by Robbie. I was glad they didn't let that drawn out too long. But Ada and her teleporting, her timing is impeccable, I must say.
Yes, she knows exactly when to blink out.
Right. But she seems genuinely puzzled about what's happening with Robbie and his power over her, because this is not something she's experienced before.
Yeah, she thinks she should pretty much be invulnerable.
Right. And, you know, some of the ways they dispatch the bad guys, taking a drill to that one guy, was kind of a nice touch.
I liked that one because it was gory, but not because it was a robot.
Right. So, you know, the team gets on the Quinjet, returns to Zephyr, though Phil is upset that he didn't get to see the two of them work together, which, again, I thought was just such a great piece of dialogue, because it reinforced the fact that, yeah, but we did get to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Superhero team.
Right. And how cool it was. And again, what a great team they make. And if that's it for them, well, at least we had that. But it'd be kind of a shame to not revisit that at some point.
Yeah. Quake and Chain.
Maybe love in it. Season 6.
Yeah.
All right. So they really are putting two and two together that Ada's plan is to have the video of LMD Daisy killing Talbot go viral, generating more fear and hatred, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, towards the Inhuman, which ultimately leads to a police state in the same way that Ada had created Hydra in the simulation.
Right. So she could be in control again. And it really is getting control for Ivanov, perhaps, having his goal of getting rid of the Inhumans, while also allowing Ophelia to be in a position of power such that she could maximize the pain that S.H.I.E.L.D. and Fitz felt.
Right. Now, you know, I'm not sure what Coulson's alternative would be, but were you at all surprised that he's willing to use the Darkhold as bait to draw Ada out?
Not really. I mean, I think it was certainly a bold move once we figured out the full scope of it. But I think the way he expressed it, yes, there were people who were like, really? Don't you think that's dangerous? But you could see he was leading up towards something extremely iffy, but also risk versus reward might be quite high.
Yeah. And I mean, it was certainly worth the risk, I think. But it was interesting that you could even tell Robbie was reluctant. Now, he just wants to take it out of this universe. And you know, the whole thing that he brings up about all the different places that he's been, and the different universes and planets. And
well, so he seems to imply that because Ghost Rider is the dominant force in these other worlds, pretty much all Ghost Rider does is kill, kill, kill. And he's just a passenger in this hell dimension or whatever you want to call it. Cause he almost seems to imply that, you know, everywhere has its own hell aspect, but he seems to think it's just another existence that Ghost Rider relishes the ability to punish people that need to be punished, perhaps.
Right. Now, you mentioned fear a few minutes ago, and that's one of the other things that comes out of this scene, is that the S.H.I.E.L.D. team realizes that Ada's afraid of Robbie.
Right. And I guess they don't know exactly why, even though we do.
Right.
But it's useful.
Right. And it motivates Coulson to take the fight back home, reclaim the S.H.I.E.L.D. HQ.
Yeah, and that's even almost more risky than using the Darkhold as bait, because S.H.I.E.L.D. HQ is certainly under surveillance and will make them magnets for capture.
Right. And Meanwhile, Fitz and Simmons are battling their own demons. And then, you know, we cut to the next scene and I don't know what the heck they were doing. I forget.
They were in the server room, I believe.
Okay. Plugging cables in, whatever it is they do. And, and then of course, this is the blue scene. Ada appears and Fitz, bless his heart, is trying to reason with her. And we understand, but does he really think he's going to be able to get through to her, knowing her as he does?
Well, I think I don't really mind that he's trying to do that, because it could either be that he truly thinks he can, or that it's just a distraction technique, because obviously it's all part of the larger plan to bring in Coulson without her realizing that Ghost Rider's in there.
Right, because we see Simmons creeping up with, I don't know, a screwdriver or whatever it was. And then, of course, Ada knows she's there, beg me to let her live.
Oh, man, that was so brutally said and delivered. And that's why I think she is like a massively evil villain. And I think we've already mentioned in episodes past how she really deserves a best villain award, best Marvel villain award, male or female.
Well, right. And of course, at this point, we believe that this is really Simmons.
Yeah.
That she's got this screwdriver in, and the way Fitz is just horrified and will do anything. I'll give you the Darkhold. That's the only thing that can stop you, which in and of itself I thought was a little obvious, and that did kind of get me thinking, all right, why would he say that?
Right. I think it's just any delay tactic he can pull out, he's going to pull it out.
Right. And then, you know, I'm going to kill everyone you love right in front of you, and there's nothing you can do. And then
that was my favorite line.
And then I was, you know what? Don't ever say there's nothing. But then she kisses him just before teleporting away. So, yeah, again, easily my favorite scene in the episode. And there were a lot of great scenes.
Yeah, I think she just killed that. I mean, you have to even think that while you're filming a scene like that, the directors have to be behind the monitors just going, yes, because I mean, she just is amazing in that scene and completely menacing.
Right. And of course we figure out pretty quickly that it's a Simmons LMD. The real Simmons shoots her, you know, just cause I wanted to. Now, again, it was really to buy a little bit of time, but it was also just cause she wanted to.
Yes, it was fun.
Right. And then the fact that Ghost Rider is inside Coulson, I didn't see that coming.
I definitely didn't. It was a multi-tiered plan because they needed Simmons to be supposedly killed or injured. And it was all a distraction so that she would feel safe and off guard, because if Robbie had popped in there to dispatch her, it wouldn't have worked. She could have just teleported away. So everything had to be just keeping her one step off of what she thought was normal.
Right. And then the fact, again, that they didn't drag it out. Ada's destroyed. And this better not be one of these deals where in the season 5.
No.
Premiere, we see the parts reassembling.
No, she's dead.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing about Ghost Rider, especially when it comes down to bringing down Dark Matter. Remember how he was able to hold on to the ghost spirit people that nothing else could touch, and he just burned them to the ground? This is a very similar effect here.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now, Fitz does, again, look a bit sad as Ada dies. Now, is it because he feels he had such an integral role in creating her, and it's a natural feeling?
I think it's got to do with his years of devotion to her in the framework, honestly.
And I do too. And I'm just thinking, I hope Simmons didn't notice.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Robbie and Coulson have returned to their respective bodies, you know, and we learn that whole idea that Ghost Rider can leave and inhabit another body. It's his choice, apparently. But we learned that there was some sort of a deal made with Ghost Rider. And I'm assuming, just the way things transpired, that the deal was, if I do this for you, then I take the Darkhold with me.
Right. And it's very curious, because I think there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not the completely confounding ending to this episode has something to do with the deal that Coulson made. But it doesn't seem to be related in any way, does it? This whole spaceship or whatever the hell it is. So, yeah, you have to wonder, what was the deal? And does it have something to do with the fact that Coulson died and came back to life? Does that come into it somehow? Because maybe that would affect how Ghost Rider felt about Coulson and maybe what was owed by him having been resurrected.
Yeah, and maybe at the heart of it all, just sense that he could trust Phil Coulson.
Maybe, yeah. Just like he knew that Mac was suffering and took him as a vessel for a little while, because that was a environment that Ghost Rider could deal with, I think. And so I think it takes a very special person to house Ghost Rider. But Coulson's obviously got a lot going on besides that, though, because we did have the interlude amongst all this thing. I think before Ada got dispatched, Coulson and May having that conversation that just is snuck in there so well. You'd think it would be jarring to have them suddenly talking about opening up the bottle of Hague again, but he does get that hint in that, you know what, there was a little something, we drank it because, you know, there was something that might have been based on real emotions, and she realizes what he's talking about. But they agree to take a step back after they get out of all this mess and open up another bottle and just see what happens. And just the kind of nod to each other, a mutual understanding of it, but not necessarily, you know, aggrandizing it at all or being embarrassed or awkward about it. They're just kind of like, yeah, let's try that. But anyway, back to business.
Well, and what also strikes me is how vulnerable they're both willing to be in this scene.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, it's so fascinating because this is a scene that the two of them have been in dozens, if not hundreds of times. You know, bullets are flying, everything's, if we get out of this alive.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what we're going to do. And
it makes sense in that context.
It absolutely does. Now, what I don't want to say doesn't make sense. I thought it was very cool, but learning that Robbie doesn't need the gateway anymore, like they're ready to fire it up, that he can open a portal with his chain. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder if they're going to be bringing him back in future seasons, if he can come and go. He could obviously make guest appearances, but see, we say that, and yet, you know, we don't see too much of Deathlok, for example. It's like, it seems like they could have people coming and going and making appearances, but I do hold out hope that we'll see him again, because he was just such a great addition. And I think of a fan favorite. I think viewers of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really thought the Ghost Rider thing worked out perhaps better than they thought it would.
Well, I for one certainly feel that way, but I guess the one thing that I didn't understand in that scene is that when the two of them, Coulson and Robbie, talk about not envying the other, well, I certainly understand Coulson not envying Robbie having Ghost Rider in him, but what does Robbie mean? What is it about Coulson that he doesn't envy?
He doesn't envy the deal that Coulson made, and perhaps he knows something about it, but certainly I think he just doesn't envy Coulson owing the Ghost Rider something.
Oh, okay. Because in and of itself, in other words, making the deal to have the Darkhold placed somewhere safe, you know, that seems like a good thing. But yeah, that's exactly, I think, the most reasonable explanation, that Coulson now owes him one.
Yep. And we have to figure out when he's going to get paid, or if this is part of his payment, the transition to season 5, who knows?
So, all right. Well, we find out that Talbot's in a coma, military's on its way, and Fitz is ready to basically go down with the fort. And my second favorite scene is certainly Daisy telling him that we leave no man behind. We're a team. We fight together. We go down together. We face the music together. And that we all understand what you've been through, because we've been through it, maybe not to the level. And I like that she brings that up. You know, it may take you longer than the rest of us.
Yeah. She didn't want to make it completely equal. And obviously he has a lot more to deal with than the average framework dweller, but still.
Right. I mean, but I think it was important to acknowledge that what Fitz was all about in the framework was infinitely worse
Yes.
than everybody else. But at the end, it's not his fault.
Right. We get it. And you should know that we get it and not beat yourself up over it.
Right. And just as I'm ready to try to find the box of Kleenex, Coulson says, well, if we're going to get arrested, I wouldn't mind getting a bite to eat.
Yeah.
I'm like, Coulson, perfect timing. What a great line.
Exactly. And obviously the scene bears discussion at the end of this, where they do go to eat. I did think it looked a little bit like the Spy's Goodbye restaurant for a moment there, but we'll save that until after we get to talking about Macalena.
Yes, because that's certainly the other storyline that's going on. Yo-Yo, and I know I've always made a point of calling her Elena and not Yo-Yo. And for whatever reason, as I was going through the notes, I just find myself calling her Yo-Yo and being comfortable with that. So
perhaps it was because of Daisy's wonderful hacking method of telling Radcliffe she needed help by placing yo-yos in his pocket and everywhere.
Well, and I also think, and I, that was pretty cool, by the way, but I also think it was her on several occasions referring to herself by that name, because...
Well, a big part of it was her trying to convince Mac by telling him, you gave me this nickname, and even telling Hope that her name is Yo-Yo and Hope finding it amusing. I think that also was part of it.
Okay. Now, it doesn't take long to figure out that something's going wrong in the framework as Daisy's monitoring things. And, you know, we see Yo-Yo is still strapped down, the chaos in the background. The Hydra soldier's about to shoot her. Now, I'm not sure I really thought she was in any danger, but I guess I'd forgotten about Radcliffe being there. So when he appears and shoots the soldier and then immediately drops the gun, like, how could I have done that? Almost wanting to divorce himself. But what choice did he have?
Oh, no. And I think it basically was just to illustrate that that wasn't part of his character to be coming in guns a-blazing. He's just the scientist.
Right. And then of course, she says, how'd you find me? And he pulls the two yo-yos out of his pocket. Now, we learn that Ada is shutting down the framework. It's collapsing on itself. And I guess this is one of those cascading systems, if you will. You can't shut the whole thing down at once, but rather system by system. I assume that's what...
Yeah. Well, especially since they characterized it as something that was being run by every cell phone, every computer, every laptop around the world. So obviously pulling the code, it makes sense in the context that they've given us. Obviously, it's a little bit science fictional in that sense, but it really did work for me that it took 12 to 15 hours to shut this thing down. And I also liked the fact that Simmons and Daisy were sort of shielding Mac and Elena and even Radcliffe to a certain extent from the effects of it, more so than the people around them, to give them that little extra bit of protection to give them time to find a way out.
Right. But of course, this is what happens when you piss off your creator.
Yeah, everything disappears around you.
So as we watch Mac and Hope, and we see Mac as this really heroic force trying to save everybody. Now, does he understand what's really happening? No, of course not.
I think he might. I mean, I think it's not until Radcliffe and Yo-Yo talk to him that he understands the full extent of it. But I think he knows, because he's seen the true nature of the world when it went pixelated around him as the other group escaped, he knows that this world is not real. He just doesn't care.
Right. And that gets brought up at the end of the episode, which I thought it was good that they reminded us of that, because I think sometimes we forget, well, you know, Mac, you know, he doesn't know Elena. Of course, he's just, but no, he's not just a simulation, right? They have mapped his brain. He's really in there, and that he's only concerned about keeping his kids safe. And then, again, another great visual as they're stuck in traffic and he looks up and the bridge over the river is gone.
That was amazing. Yeah. Because you realize the full extent of it as people were trying to escape whatever's going on to their world. It starts to get worse and worse, and scarier for Hope anyway, is when the people on the bus that Mac was trying to get to escape from the SHIELD headquarters, the Inhumans that had been kept in there, all of them disappear except for Mac, Elena, Radcliffe, and Hope.
Right. And like Elena, despite the fact that I know Hope was not real, I still felt bad for her because,
yes.
because she was so frightened by it. The others understood what was going on.
Right.
So at this point, how do we get Mac and Elena, who, as Coulson says, I believe it was Coulson says, she went in there of her own volition without a plan. But Daisy comes up with a plan, and that's to create a back door. But as she says, I can't make them go through it. I can provide it for them.
Yeah, I actually really wondered what she was going to do. I kind of was very happy that the door ended up just appearing for them so that it was clear what it was there for. But at first, when she first brought it up, I'm like, how are they going to get them to come through this back door? Because I do think Elena went in thinking it was going to be much easier than it was. Like she said, she thought that once Max saw her, he would remember her. And that's just not the case.
Right. And then what a wonderful scene between Radcliffe and Elena, because Elena is just ready to jump in, grab Mac, and take him through the back door. And Radcliffe tries to get her to slow down a minute, think about how he's going to react after the fact.
Right.
And I don't think it's something she thought about.
And it's kind of a surprising turn of expectation, because you would think Radcliffe wouldn't bother with that, that he might just be off on a beach with his scotch already rather than helping her see something like this.
Right. And then all for a little girl that isn't even real. And I didn't realize at first that Hope overheard it.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Oh, and then Elena makes the decision. Okay, Mac won't leave because of his love for Hope. I'm not going to leave because of my love for Mac. And if we want to get overly sentimental, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, love wins out.
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure what was going to happen there, because obviously Radcliffe doesn't care. He can't leave anyway. But I guess I wasn't expecting the obvious, and that is that Hope would be the first to disappear, which would force the issue. And they didn't actually show us them leaving the framework, so they kind of left it up for question as to what happened after that. Obviously, there was a time for mourning. Obviously, it was a sad moment for Mac and Elena. But I think it's also obvious that at that point, they would come out. And of course, they did.
Right. But I guess I felt Elena sat down, made the decision to stay, not knowing for certain that Hope would disappear.
Not at all. That's right.
So that once Hope disappeared, then it became easier for Mac to make that decision. But I just thought that was such a selfless act on her part that, you know, if there's a couple that's going to make it, it's going to be them.
Right. I don't think there's a ton of chemistry between them. And this has been brought up out on social media and elsewhere. But like Faith, I think, is always saying, I don't care. I love Michaelina. I don't care what people think. I think I'm the same way. I don't care that there's not a whole lot of chemistry between the actors. I still love the couple.
Well, and I wonder, though, if that's part of the characters.
Yeah, that's true.
and not necessarily a fault of the actors. Because
they're from very different backgrounds,
right? Of who Mac is and has been. And the same with her, that it's almost as if the two of them are going to have to be together and that they'll soften each other along the way. So,
yep.
You know, again, whether the writers will let them stay together or not, who knows? I mean, you've got all these couples, which are we talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. here? So that, I mean, this can't turn into, you know,
some soap opera or
something.
Yeah.
So, but I like the fact that Mac verbalizes the fact that the time he had with Hope made him realize that he could have the same thing with Elena in the real world. So again, just a really wonderful thing to realize and then verbalize to her, especially given everything she's been willing to do to get him back.
And that's what the attitude that I was hoping he would have was, that he would be thankful for the time he did get, which he would not have had without the framework. He's the only one that got something out of the framework that he wanted.
Okay. Now, I you probably remember who it is. I forget who posted on the Facebook group. If you could have one character from the framework to come back to the show, who would it be?
Oh, yeah. That was John. We'll hear from him in this feedback segment.
And it's a wonderful poll. I still don't know who, so I still haven't voted, although I did post on there. And it makes me think, all right, I know I keep saying, well, the blue scene is my favorite scene. And then I talked about the scene with Daisy, you know, consoling Fitz, and that, you know, it's we're in this together.
The inspirational speech. Yeah.
But we get to the scene with Radcliffe sitting alone on the beach with a bottle.
That's a good one, too.
Quoting T.S. Eliot's The Hollow Men. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Yeah.
I mean, how perfect.
It fits so well, especially given the way that he just sort of winks out of existence in the middle of a sentence.
And the sound just disappears.
Yeah, totally. No sound. Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
That's awesome.
And him acknowledging that it was all about Agnes and the love of his life and his inability to live forever with her. All right. Well, the two final scenes, which are obviously inextricably linked. That said, I'm not sure any of us really know what it is we saw.
Exactly. But like I said, it starts with this restaurant scene, which was a happier version of the spy's goodbye scene, in my view, which obviously one of my favorite scenes of the series. But it seemed like everyone was having fun, and Coulson even mentions, I don't think we've been together like this in a long time, and it seems to be a happy moment. And then, of course, they hear before they see people approach. Actually, I guess the power goes out first, because Coulson has that great line. Kudos on the power outage. That was so menacing. Very sarcastically.
Yeah.
But they all put up their hands as though they knew this was coming.
Yeah. And then we see one of the, and first of all, we don't know exactly who these guys are.
No. Although the voice sounds so familiar from the main non-soldierly looking guy in the darkness. I wonder who that actor is.
Right. But he pulls out a small device that seems to freeze in time, not, you know, cold freezing.
Yeah.
Coulson and the entire team. And then he utters that line, the window closes in less than 2 minutes. Take them.
Now, at this point, we could have some long conversation about what we think that means. The problem is we have no idea
right
what that means.
So whether it's time travel, whether it's parallel universe, like you said, we don't know.
Aliens.
Right. And then when we get to the epilogue and we see Coulson waking up in stark quarters, dressed in drab dystopian garb. I mean, our first thought is, okay, he's in prison.
And it took me a while. I watched it a few times, as I'm sure a lot of people did. He says, okay, Phil, back to work. He kind of takes a big, deep breath. And I thought, okay, is he just looking around and saying, huh, this is what I'm confronted with. Okay, well, I'm going to deal with it. But no, it's not him seeing it for the first time, because when he gets up, he goes right to the panel, knows how to flip the switch to get the window to open. He's been here for a while. He's been here at least more than just a few days. And it's a routine that's already been set up. Don't you think?
I do. And the first time, I still think he's in prison. Then he opens, you know, that wall so we can see out into space. And then we think, oh, okay, he's not a prisoner. And then I think, well, oh, okay, he's a prisoner. He just can open the window, but then
he opens the door.
he opens the door and leaves the room. Now, again, in retrospect, does that mean he's just going to whatever prisonerly duties he has to do that day? Or
yeah, well, who knows?
Who knows?
People are looking out the window and thinking, there's a blue light back there. Is there something going on with Guardians of the Galaxy? Or, you know, they want to tie it into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe. And perhaps it does have something to do with, you know, Infinity War or something, but there's not a whole lot to go on.
Right. I mean, the clothing, I think, is pretty meaningful. I just don't know exactly what it means.
I don't think we're meant to. I mean, you remember the season finale last year where Radcliffe first introduced Ada, and we're just like, well, how's this new LMD going to come into play? And now, of course, we know. So I think they really are truly setting this up and purposely making it so that we have no idea, because we don't need to know.
Well, I hope the showrunners come out and tell us what we're supposed to think.
That's what's so great. Again, I must mention the article in the show notes. I've mentioned it earlier. Great Q&A with the producers where they actually finally say nothing. And I have to applaud them for that.
Well, it's about darn time.
It's right. All right. Well, we had a few lines, and I can predict a few of them that are going to show up here. But let's listen to what Faith came up with in the Coles Test Report, as well as the winner, the very close winner from last week.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the final Coles Test Report of Season 4. Because it's the finale, this one is supersized. We have 7 contenders. But before I share those, here's the winner from last week. No landslide this time. It was a close race, and the winner won by simply 2 votes. Never robotic at all.
You must have spotted the decoy right away, right?
Yeah, because you're never robotic at all.
And now for this week's contenders. Number 1, we need another bottle of Haig.
Has to go our way. And then, you're going to explain why you drank that bottle of Haig without me.
Fair enough, but we're going to need another bottle to discuss what happened with that bottle.
Number 2, this stuff happens in S.H.I.E.L.D.
The short answer is, they were murdered by a vanishing banshee made of matter from another dimension.
You expect me to put that in my report?
I have a cybernetic hand. I've been to another planet. This stuff happens in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Number 3, therapy.
I decided it might be fun to watch you kill yourself.
Ada, seriously, therapy, just consider it.
Number 4, never say you can't stop me.
Even if you defeat this body, I will build more. You cannot stop me.
Never say you can't stop me, because the minute you do... Well, yeah, got it.
Number 5, missed it, didn't I?
You missed it, didn't I? You two together and we missed it. Damn! Come on, we gotta go. Come on!
Number 6, Robot May.
This is a terrible plan.
You know, Robot May was way more supportive.
Is she what happened to the Haig?
That again? Really? You want to have that talk now?
And number 7, power outage.
Philip J. Coulson.
Yep, that's me. You got us. Nice job. And hey, congrats on the whole power outage thing. It was very ominous.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. This has been an amazing season of solid writing and brilliant Colsass. I look forward to Season 5 being just as awesome. Thank you, everyone, for all the Colsass tweets as well. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM. Look for the poll this weekend. I will post a special video edition of the winner in a couple of weeks. While you do that, I'm going to enjoy the view a little bit longer before I get back to work. Have a great summer, everyone.
All right. I definitely know my choice for this one. Had it in mind the whole time. But if you want to vote, go to the Facebook group, like Faith says. It's our last one, so we won't necessarily announce the winner. But if you go to Facebook, you'll be able to see who wins this week's poll. So let's dive into feedback next. We heard from a bunch of people, a lot of our regulars. Peter wrote in and said, I can't believe they left us with a cliffhanger like that. We're forced to ponder what deal Coulson made with Ghost Rider and where in space they are. With next season starting after Inhumans finishes its short run, I wonder if the final scene in space is setting up how they pick up from the Inhumans finale. I was actually looking forward to having a story arc next season of our agents as outlaws on the run. I guess we're going to get some kind of space adventure instead, which is just as good. I really wish that Ada got to survive. Her character was very interesting, and as evil as she was, it would have been great to see her evolve and perhaps become an ally in later seasons. I was also hoping that we'd get to see Ward and Trip one last time. Somehow they'll be brought back. I can't imagine the showrunners teasing the fans about Trip being the new Patriot a few episodes ago and never let us see that happen. I actually can't imagine that, Peter. Sorry. That's plain evil. Overall, this has been an amazing season. The tripod format, very nice. It was incredibly successful in my eyes. They gave us 3 mini seasons of stories and nearly every episode counted. There weren't any fillers that I can remember. That's true. I don't think there were. I hope that they will continue with this format into next season. Speaking of next season, with Inhumans airing in the fall with an 8-episode run, my prediction is that Inhumans will take place mid to late September and finish up in November. All shows go into hiatus in December, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will come back in January. I wasn't able to find out if they got a full 22-episode season order, and I think Peter must have written this before that news became widely known. So yes, they do have 22 episodes. If they did, it just so happens that there are about 21 weeks from January till the end of May, which means Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could air without taking any breaks next season. And Dave, I think that is what will happen, don't you?
I'm beginning to think that. I mean, I think it's possible they could, say, run three episodes end of November, first 2 weeks of December, just to get the ball rolling and then go into hiatus. But
yeah, that sounds right.
Because with 21 weeks, no shows really do that. You go that many weeks in a row without a break of any kind.
Right. So maybe a few in 2016 and then the rest nonstop in some form. If this was the plan, I think that the crew could start production as though they could premiere in fall, which gives them a head start. The crew could probably take the same weeks off, but with the show airing in January, we wouldn't have any gaps for airing the show like we normally do. Fingers crossed that this is the plan. And unfortunately, yeah, I think that might hurt our option for having the pods, which I really did like. I'm looking forward to next season, and I'm really interested to see where the show will go now that the team is lost in space.
Of course, we don't know that. It might just be Coulson.
It might just be Coulson, right, exactly. So,
all right, well, we heard from Taltos, who says, well, good thing the show was renewed. We still have VJ cocooned at the bottom of the sea.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Anton's brain controlling an untold number of duplicates. And with the reveal that Anton and Ada had made a replica, Sergei Mishkin, it's possible there are even more LMDs running loose. Anton and Ada's new version of the Cambridge incident seemed lacking.
Yes.
They had the Daisy LMD shoot Talbot. Could they really not use the Darkhold to imbue her with some Quake-like powers? It doesn't make Inhumans seem all that threatening when they still have to use guns to be dangerous.
That's a good point. If you wanted to make Inhumans threatening, she should have come in with her Quake powers blazing, not guns.
Yeah. The Stinger was intriguing. It'll be nice to hopefully get away from the World Hates S.H.I.E.L.D. storylines for a bit.
Yeah.
Though I guess we'll be in for an extra long wait with S.H.I.E.L.D. not premiering until after the Inhumans finishes airing.
Yep. It's going to be a long hiatus. But lots of speculation in the meantime. All right. Let's see what Skimmins had to say. She said, I really loved Fitz in the opening not trying to excuse his actions. Again, this makes him different from Ward. Because as he said, he did do those things because no one made him. Even with his father braiding him, it was still his choice to do things like shoot Agnes. So it's just very refreshing seeing him not playing the victim and taking easy outs, Gemma tried to offer. Great, sassy Daisy line about never saying you can't be beat. Again, I know the Ophelia Fitz banter scenes aren't meant to be funny, but I find them hilarious for the deliveries between Ian and Mallory. Yeah, Ophelia just won best bad guy ever on the series so far. You did this, Fitz. I feel this is an unfair statement, as he wasn't alone in the project, and he did mean well with Ada. So while, yes, his protection of her helped get to this point, it's not all on him. A great twist with LMD Gemma, but I wonder where they found her intact, as I doubt they had time to build her. An amazing performance by Henry Simmons playing Mac, losing hope. I will say, though, I'm conflicted about Mac's return, because if he ever dies on the show in another season, it's going to pale in comparison to this possible exit, I feel. I just can't think of a better death for his character. If he leaves alive, that could be emotional too, but I just feel this was such a great potential exit for him. It feels a shame in part that they used it up. The dimension created by Robbie was cool. Maybe it's just me, but I feel the Radcliffe Beach death scene was unneeded. I don't know about that. I think I'm like Dave. It was very poignant and poetic in its own way. We knew he didn't care to live without Agnes from previous episodes, so I would have been fine with it being highly suggested he died in the apartment after Yo-Yo and Mac left. Yes, it was just a few seconds, but seeing the Avengers-style diner scene after it would have given those moments to him and moved the not with a bang but with a whimper line, if it was needed, to the apartment scene with Mac and Elena. Let the speculation begin on if the team are all on the ship or in various locations, and if they're spaced out, what's happening to them. Overall, a really great episode and awesome season.
Yeah, I like that idea that they're not all together on the ship, although I'm not sure logistically if that makes sense for the production of the show.
Right. And I think that they're purposely leading us to believe that it happened as a direct result of the Ghost Rider deal, which might put Coulson by himself on this one.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got an audio submission this week from JT of BCS. So why don't we take a listen and hear what he had to say?
Okay. Well, first, it looks like Ophelia's arc is done. Mallory Jensen knocked it out of the park again. I'm really going to be sad to see her go if we don't see her again. I'd like to see her as a regular. Leave it up to the writers, though. They could find some crazy, insane way of bringing her back, and I sure hope they do. And I got to say, John Hannah's Holden Radcliffe, he completely owned that little mini-pod of Mac and Elena. He really hadn't interacted with Yo-Yo before. And in that small space of time, he built a relationship with her and stayed with her and Mac. And he didn't necessarily have to sacrifice himself. He sort of accepted that. But still, he spent all his remaining time trying to get Yo-Yo and Mac back. And that's so noble. And how about that outro? They're setting up for the next season. The writers said not to take anything for granted in that scene. They said everything meant something. And the very first thing that I noticed, which I guess everybody else did and they probably promptly forgot, were the three switches that Coulson flipped on the wall. He had control of those, you know, and even in a cell block, I don't think they have like control of the light switches. So I'm thinking they're not in a prison. Just because it looks kind of grimy and dingy, that might imply age, but not necessarily that they don't have any control of their situation. And what a view. Wow, that was cool. And wherever they are, it's probably better than hang out there than on Earth right now, because they're kind of in hot water back there. So taking a little time out may be a good idea. I can't believe that we have to wait until the beginning of 2018 for more S.H.I.E.L.D. Just gotten so used to this new way of storytelling. It is so complex. And yet, it's so accessible, too. You can go away, miss an entire pod, come back, and you're either at the beginning or someplace within a new pod, and yet it has so many callbacks to a previous pod you might have missed that it encourages you to go back and binge watch that, which, with today's modern technology and the internet, is possible. So it's like, this is awesome. This is awesome. By the way, I just got to say that portal that Ghost Rider opened absolutely looked like Shambhala to me. I mean, it looked like a snowscape or a snow landscape with those prayer towers. I was thinking Nepal immediately. And then I had to go take a look at some pictures. And I was like, yeah, that was a definite callback to Doctor Strange. It's entirely within the realm of possibility that Ghost Rider was just taking the book, The Darkhold, back to the library where it belongs in the first place. Anyway, this summer, I'm definitely going to be rewatching the pods. I think there's so much complex interconnectedness that this is going to be fun. I don't know if you've been reading some of their interviews. They actually seem almost as surprised as we are at this new format succeeding. It seemed like they were definitely experimenting, and they've stumbled across something that, well, in a way, Netflix has sort of done that with all of their Marvel shows, but they did them in a more traditional format with really long seasons instead of this micro-season mini-pod format that they entangle at the end. I'm really looking forward to this format, and I hope that it expands and grows and that other series copy and adopt it, because it's a great idea. I really, really, really like this micro-arc, micro-pod thing. It's great. I know that Sci-Fi Channel with the 12 Monkeys is going to be trying something like that too this Friday. And then we're going to try an old school Twin Peaks thing on Sunday. So anyway, I'm rambling. Thank you all. Great season. Great show. See you next time. Bye.
Well, thank you, JT. That was a very interesting, and the listeners should know that JT went on for a good 12 or 13 minutes on the original version of this. So I did edit it quite a bit, but obviously a lot of good thoughts in there. And we thank JT for being such an integral part of this season's feedback segment. So thank you very much, JT. And lastly, we heard from Faith, who says, while an amazing episode, it's not the best finale Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has ever done. but when you have to follow up something as solid as The Return, it's a tough run. I think even the showrunners knew how big the penultimate episode was since they wrote it. We had some things wrapped up. Ada has been defeated, though I'll miss Mallory Jansen. Mac found closure. Radcliffe didn't find immortality, but he did go out a hero, or sort of. But there are so many questions. Where is the Superior's head? Obviously, that's not the end of him. Plus, he read the Darkhold. That is not a good thing, as we have learned. Will Fitz ever forgive himself? He built the LMD Gemma, and I'm curious if the line, "Fitz, you did this," was his guilt or Gemma's thoughts shining through. Will we see Robbie and Ghost Rider again? I swear there's something sparking between Robbie and Daisy. Yeah, I think you're right there. It might just be a strong friendship, but we know where strong friendships can go on this show, right? Also, he's got to come back and check in on the team and help them defeat the Superior. What in the heck did Coulson have to do to have Ghost Rider take him over? Did the guys at the end have anything to do with that deal, or was that all just a nice coincidence? Is Coulson alone in this work prison spaceship? Was it there before the team went to the diner? When Coulson says, "It's been a long time since we've all been together," was that ironic, since he might not have actually been sitting there? Oh, now you're blowing my mind here. Why do I have to wait until late fall to get all of these answers? Just want to say thank you, Mike and Dave, for a great podcast every week. Can't wait to have you guys back in the fall as well. Well, thank you, Faith, and we can't wait to have you back in the fall along with us. So lots of great feedback there, and we want to thank you guys all for participating in this finale discussion. And it's really been a fun ride this season, and I hope you agree that it's been pretty much a top season amongst the four seasons so far, and we hope that it's just going to get better from here. But that's going to be it for this season of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction. It just never stops, especially on Facebook. But you can follow us also on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/Agents of Shield GSM, which is also where you can vote on that final Colsass report of the year.
And Mike and I will be back for season 5 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But in the meantime, be sure to check out our other ongoing podcasts. You can search for Sci-Fi TV Rewatch, where we're about to embark on a new rewatch. And of course, Sci-Fi Fidelity, our monthly discussion and interviews for Den of Geek.
And Corey and I are also releasing an entire season's worth of podcasts here on Golden Spiral Media this weekend for the 12 Monkeys Season 3 linear binge on Sci-Fi. So if you watch that show, and if you're not, why aren't you? Be sure to check that out as well.
And remember, we expect you all back for season 5, or I might just have to quake your skinny asses out the window.